It's half past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike invites you to our Information Please party. We play a simple game. You supply us with stickers, and we do our best to unstick them. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more, plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, whose new book, Reading I've Liked, is appearing on most of the bestseller lists, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, Information Please is completely informal and unrehearsed. Tonight, the board of experts consists of Franklin P. Adams, better known as FPA, John Kieran, sports authority and naturalist, Russell Krauss, co-author of Life with Faber and co-producer of Arsenic and Old Lace, and as our special guest, one of England's foremost novelists, the creator of Captain Horatio Hornblower and of The Captain from Connecticut, Mr. C.S. Forrester. Now remember, for each question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25, and that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We're off with a question coming to us from Garrett D. Burns of Providence, Rhode Island. Now, this is a question that involves the use of specialized phrases. I want you to get all of them. There are four. Who might crack a case? Crack a case. How is that phrase used in what walk of life? Mr. Forrester.
Burglar opening a safe?
That would be cracking a safe, I think, but not cracking a case. Mr. Adams.
In litigation. Trial, criminal case, say.
Yes, but you mean a lawyer would use the phrase? You would say a lawyer cracked the case? I don't think that would be accurate. Mr. Kieran?
No.
A newspaper reporter
police
might crack
a case.
Yes, the police would. A newspaper reporter might, acting as a detective, but a policeman or a detective, it simply means, Mr. Kieran, what?
Busted wide open.
Yes, to solve a crime. I think two improper guesses on that will count that as wrong. How about to heave the lead? To heave the lead would mean what? I'm just curious.
To heave the lead would be to take soundings on a ship.
Yes, why do you...
Find the depths of the water to make sure whether you have enough to sail on or not.
Good enough. I think to me you'd know before that if you had enough to sail on, wouldn't you?
Well, you would know if you hadn't enough.
Well, why do we say heave the lead? Is it
well,
an actual lead?
Well, it's a lead weight
a lead
on
weight.
The line.
Yes. How about throw a block? Throw a block. How would that be used? Mr. Kieran.
You would throw a block in football if you knew how to do it and were following the instructions of the coach.
Good enough. And finally, to roll a lush. Has any of you gentlemen ever done that? Mr. Forrester.
It's to rob a drunken man.
Yes, how do you happen to know that, Mr. Forrester?
Only from reading.
Roll a lush means to rob a drunk. And how do we get the word lush? Anybody know, Mr. Krauss?
Oh, I wasn't going to answer that question. I said I wanted to say that I've tried rolling a lush in a poker game that doesn't work.
No. Maybe they weren't sufficiently lush. What does lush come from? It's a funny word to use for a drunken person. Any guesses on it? Well, the word luscious, L-U-S-C-I-U-S, means full of juice. Very juicy, and I suppose a lush is a person who's full of alcoholic juices. Seems reasonable. That gives us only 3 out of 4, which means that we lose $25 instead of the center. And Mr. Burns, courtesy of Lucky Strike, gets both. And that sends us on to a question from M.K. Murphy of Concord, Massachusetts. Get 3 out of 4 on this. Now, by special dispensation, gentlemen, we will be permitted to do a little swearing on this program now. Who swore the following oaths? Who swore by yonder blessed moon? Mr. Kieran.
Romeo.
Romeo did, yes. To whom did he do the swearing?
Well, that time it was to Juliet.
To Juliet. What do you mean that time?
Well, in the first act, it's to Rosalind. He changed his mind quickly.
Yes, very, very quickly. Lady, by yonder blessed moon, I swear the tips with silver all the fruit tree tops, which is all I have on my card. Mr. Kieran could no doubt go on with it. Who swore by the hair on his chin? By the hair of Mr. Adams.
Chinny chin chin.
You got the right reference, all right, Mr. Adams, but who did the swearing? Is there such a person as Chinny Chin Chin? Mr. Forrester.
The little pig.
Yes, the little pig. He swore by the hair on his chinny chin chin, which means a very small chin, Mr. Adams. And the little pig and the three little pigs. Who swore by the nine gods? Mr. Forrester.
Lars Porsena.
Yes. Do you know the reference, Mr. Forrester?
It's in Tales of Ancient Rome by Macaulay.
Yes. The Lays of Ancient Rome. Can you give us the lines, Mr. Kieran? Could you?
Lars Porsena of Clusium, by the nine gods he swore.
Good enough.
That thing was from Brooklyn.
And finally, who swore to be true to each other? Mr. Adams.
Frankie and Jonathan.
That's quite right. I've never known you to be as elegant as that on this program, Mr. Adams. Yes, Frankie and Johnny swore to be true to each other. Well, that gives at least 3 out of 4. How about this one? John F. Putnam of Asheville, North Carolina. Get 2 out of 3. It's a question about naval battles. What famous naval battle is named after a cape? These are going to be geographical terms. A cape, Mr. Kieran.
Trafalgar.
Cape Trafalgar. Where is Cape Trafalgar?
It's off the west coast of Spain,
I think. What famous battle was that?
It's one which Lord Nelson won his victory.
Won a famous victory against the French and Spanish fleets combined. That would be correct, Mr. Forrester. I believe you'd be the last authority on that. How about a famous naval battle named after a lake? There may be more than one. Mr. Forrester.
Lake Erie.
Lake Erie, yes. The United States versus the British. What year was that, Mr. Forrester?
1813.
1813 is exactly right. Mr. Krause, do you have another answer? I noticed your hand.
No, I was just going to mention the hero of that battle.
Name him.
Mr. Perry, Oliver Perry.
Yes, Oliver Hazard Perry. Mr. Adams.
Battle of Lake Trasimenus.
I beg your pardon?
The Battle of Lake Trasimenus.
It's funny, it sounds just like Lake Trasimenus to me.
I don't think that was...
Am I right or wrong?
Is that right, Forrester? What is the Battle of Lake Trasimenus? Mr. Adams.
It was in the Punic Wars, I believe, and I don't think it was a naval battle.
Otherwise,
it was a land battle.
You see, Mr. Adams, you never should have mentioned it. How about it, Mr. Forrester? Can you help us out?
Yes, it was a land battle that Hannibal won.
A land battle
on the shore of the lake.
On the shore of the lake.
That's right, but it doesn't make it quite a naval battle. The only other one that perhaps we can think of readily is the Battle of Lake Champlain in 1814. Again, in the war against the British. How about a naval battle named after a bay? Named after a bay. Mr. Forrester.
Aboukir.
Aboukir.
Otherwise called the Battle of the Nile.
That would be a river, wouldn't it?
But Aboukir is a bay.
Is it the mouth of the Nile?
Yes.
One of the Napoleonic, in the Napoleonic Wars. That will do. How about, Mr. Adams, got another one?
Battle of Mobile Bay.
Battle of Mobile Bay, yes. Who's the hero of that?
Don't know.
Well, we have...
Hobson.
Pardon?
Oh. Richmond Pearson Hobson.
I think Farragut.
Farragut.
I think Farragut. He had
a battle down there, too.
Yeah, well, it was Farragut I was thinking of. And then in 1898, there's the famous Battle of Manila Bay against Spain. I guess we're all right on that one. How about this? From Mrs. Frank Goostray of Watertown, Massachusetts. Get 2 out of 3. This is about famous boasters of fact or fiction. Identify them from the characteristic lines that I read to you now. I have run away from a little old woman and a little old man, and I can run away from you, I can. Who boasted thus? I've run away from a little old woman and a little old man, and I can run away from you, I can. No soap. It's the gingerbread boy in the little child story of that name. Have you ever read it, Mr. Adams?
Never.
I guess you've never read it. That's one wrong. You have to get the next 2 right. Now, the first speaker says, well, then, my father will once sit a hanging. And the second speaker says, it was my father what was hanged. Who's doing the boasting? Doesn't come back to you. It's in a very famous novel, Mr. Adams.
Is it by Barry?
It is indeed.
Sentimental Tommy.
Absolutely right, Mr. Adams. Very good. Sentimental Tommy is the second speaker. That's pretty good going, because not many of us, I think, would remember that. You wouldn't remember who the name of the first speaker, would you, Mr. Adams?
No.
Shovel. What were you going to say, Mr. Forrester?
I'm
sure you were. How about this one? Tell them what I did to Philadelphia Jack O'Brien. Who boasted that way? Mr. Adams.
Harry Watson.
That's right. Who was Harry Watson?
He was an excellent variety comedian.
That's a nice way of putting it. Yes. Also acted in burlesque. Mr. Krause?
Fickle, Watson, and Roth. He was a member of a very famous team. He later appeared with Anna Held in several musical comedies.
Are you going to go on?
No, I should have known the answer, though, and I'm very angry with myself.
remember that the payoff on that joke, he says, tell him what I did to Philadelphia Jack O'Brien, and in an undertone, but don't tell him what he did to me. Did you know that, Mr. Forrester?
There's an English musical comedian who used exactly the same tag. I hadn't heard it in connection with an American comedian. So.
Yes. Thanks for that hands across the scene.
Oh, we've been stealing jokes from England for years.
How about this from Mrs. Let's see, we were all right on that one, weren't we? Yes, got 2 out of 3. Now, how about this from Mrs. S.P. Dunham of West Newton, Massachusetts? Get 2 out of 3 again. What seaports serve these cities? The city of Athens is not itself a seaport, but it has a seaport. Mr. Krause.
Piraeus.
Piraeus, right. What seaport serves Los Angeles? Mr. Forrester.
San Pedro.
San Pedro. And what one serves Leningrad? Leningrad, Mr. Krause?
Well, Leningrad is on the Neva River. It is a port. I've docked at Leningrad. On a
all
boat.
By yourself?
All by myself, practically.
Hey, that's quite a cargo. I think, however, that they have a port much busier than Leningrad that serves it. Mr. Forrester, was that your hand? Was that
Kronstadt?
Kronstadt, yes. The where they have a famous naval, they have a big naval base, don't they, Mr. Forrester there?
Yes.
That gives us, 2 out of 3. Now, how about this one from Augusta K. Preston of Boston? This is about famous court trials of fiction. Can you identify them? In the first court trial, the order of procedure was reversed completely. Mr. Curran.
In Alice in Wonderland, the trial of the Knave of Hearts for stealing tarts, I believe. They gave the verdict first.
Gave the verdict first and the evidence afterward.
That's
right. Yes. And what one was conducted in foxtrot rhythm? A court trial conducted in foxtrot rhythm, Scraps.
I think that was the trial in the George M. Cohan Review. I think it was a burlesque on Common Clay, or one of the plays of the day.
100% right, Mr. Krause.
Right. Then you came to testify. What do you got to say?
That's right. By the way, George M. Cohan is very ill tonight, and I hope he realizes that everybody's rooting for him and hoping he's going to get well to write another George M. Cohan review.
You bet. I hope, in case he isn't listening in, some of his friends will tell him that you said that, Mr. Krause. Now, how about this one? A famous fictional court trial which was tried by a successful lawyer in disguise. A lawyer in disguise. Mr. Krause.
Well, that would be Portia, wouldn't it?
Sure. In The Merchant of Venice. That's right. Now, let's see. So far, Lucky Strike has paid out $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now Mr. Cross points out one thing that's absolutely necessary for a good smoke.
That's fine tobacco, Mr. Fadiman. For make no mistake, ladies and gentlemen, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And the better the tobacco, the better the smoke. That's why it means so much to you that Lucky Strike consistently pays the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobacco. For example, so far this season, according to latest reports at Lewisburg, North Carolina, the American Tobacco Company has paid 23% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 23% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we buy goes into Lucky's. That's why Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Mr. Fadiman, doesn't that simple fact make it worth every smoker's while to try Lucky's?
It does indeed, Mr. Cross. And I timed you at just 51 seconds. Now, how about this one, gentlemen, from Dale Hart of Staten Island, New York? This is about knots, three different kinds of knots. Let's see, three knots really ought to make an affirmative, shouldn't they? Get 2 out of 3 if you can. Describe a granny knot. A granny knot. What's a granny knot? Mr. Curran?
Well, I don't have to diagram it. It's
not
a knot
air.
That sailors use for making fast, a ship to a bollard on the pier or anything. You use it for various fastenings.
Yes.
On our office.
Does it have any special function?
Yes, it's a very simple knot. Grandmother's supposed to be able to tie it in a jiffy.
Grandmother is?
Granny.
Oh, Granny, I see. I get it. It's a sailor's knot that first slips for a little while, just a few inches, and then jams. Isn't that it, Mr. Forrester?
No, I don't. I'm sorry, I don't agree with Mr. Curran at all.
All right, this is your chance.
The granny knot is an attempt to tie a reef knot in which you do not succeed, in which you tie a knot which will not hold and will and parts when strain comes on it. It's a very undesirable knot, and it's never used for fastening ships to bollards, not by any manner of means.
How about that, Kieran?
I'm sunk.
Now, Mr. Forrester, let me get this clear. It doesn't jam at all. In other words, it continues to slip if you exert further pressure on it.
Yes.
Is that right?
That's right.
Well, then my information is incorrect. Because according to my information, it slips a little bit, and then it's supposed to jam and hold tight.
Well, if it does jam in those conditions, then no one can undo it again. That's one of the nuisances.
It's a badly tied knot,
yes.
In that case.
Yes.
And shouldn't be called a granny knot at all, but something else.
It's a granny knot because only grandmothers tie it. Sensible people don't.
It's a terrible blow at grandmothers.
You can't talk like that about my grandmother.
I don't know what kind of knots your grandmother ties.
Wonderful. Nuptial.
How about a love knot? What's a love knot, gentlemen? Mr. Curran.
The bonds of matrimony.
Yes, any objection to that, Mr. Forrester?
That sometimes slips too, Mr. Fathom.
Yes, it does. And jams too. How about a what knot?
I thought you were going to ask for another knot, K-N-O-T.
What other knot?
Well, there's a bird called a knot. It's a shore bird.
I had not
thrown in free.
I had no intention of bringing that up. Mr. Adams?
What knot is an étagère?
I beg your pardon.
A curio cabinet.
Oh, I thought it was one of those things that was fought somewhere in the Mediterranean Sea. An étagère, a curio cabinet. Yes. When was it used, or is it still used, Mr. Adams? Do you have
still
one?
Still used.
Still used?
About the time of the granny knot.
No doubt. That's tying up the program, Mr. Carlos. That's great. How about this one? From Auntie White of Palo Alto, California. This is about famous dairy maids. Get 2 out of 3. What dairymaid loved only unselfishly? Loved only unselfishly. Famous dairymaid, Mr. Adams.
Patience.
Patience, yes, quite right. In Gilbert and Sullivan's opera of the same name. And what dairymaid asked a cow for butter? Asked a cow for butter. Mr. Curran.
That's in Milne's famous little song.
King's Breakfast.
Yes, the King's Breakfast. Remember the line?
Yes.
Go ahead, Mr. Curran. The dairymaid?
Queen asked the dairymaid. The dairymaid curtsied and said she would go and ask the cow now.
The Alderney.
The Alderney.
She wanted a little butter for the royal slice of
That's
bread.
That's right. Don't forget the butter for the royal slice of bread. Now, how about a dairymaid who carried her fortune wherever she went? What dairymaid was that who carried her fortune wherever she went, Mr. Forrester?
The maid who went a-milking.
Yes. What's the story of the maid who went a-milking? Do you remember, Mr. Forrester?
And what is your fortune? A man said to her, and she said, my face is my fortune.
Yes,
she said.
And what happened after that?
And the gentleman said that at that rate he wouldn't marry her.
Yes. And what happened after that?
Why, she probably slapped his face, but I don't
Nobody
know.
Asked you to, sir.
That is right. Thank you, Mr. Adams. And that's the end of that story. Oh, we did very well on dairy maids. Mm-hmm. Here's one from Herman Cohen of Seattle, Washington. I think we ought to get all on this. Now, if you were looking for information in the works of these men, whose names I'll give you, what subject would you be interested in? The first is a man named, and this is his last name, Jane, J-A-N-E. What subject, Mr. Curran?
Fighting Ships of the World.
Yes, it's a famous manual. Mr. Forrester had his hand up, too, and was going to say the same thing, I'm sure. How about a man named Zolotov? If you were looking up the works of Zolotov, Mr. Krauss?
The theater, with the openings for the week.
That's right.
Mr. Samuel Zolotov of the New York Times.
Yes, sort of advanced theatrical guide. And how about information in the works of a man named Fowler? What would you be looking up in that case, Mr. Adams?
English Usage.
Yes, what's the title
usage.
Of the book? Modern English Usage by H.W. Fowler. A very good book, by the way, for anyone who really wishes to use the language well. How about Moody's? Moody, M-O-O-D-Y, Mr. Curran.
It's a financial rating reference book.
A manual.
A manual of investments. That would be quite right. Now, how about this? From J.W. Ashcraft of Cortland, New York. Get 2 out of 3 on this. In what books would you encounter these officers? Captain Marlowe. Where would you meet Captain Marlowe? These are going to be all captains, by the way. Mr. Forrester, you're an expert on captains. You have
not on Captain Marlowe, I'm not.
Well, you should read other nautical works that perhaps even rival your own. This one is called Lord Jim by Joseph Conrad, which I know you've read.
Yes.
You've just forgotten Captain Marlowe. Remember that, Mr. Kieran?
Yes. Too late.
But one wrong. I have to get the next two right. Captain Christopherson would be found where? Captain Christopherson.
I'll take a guess if nobody else wants it. Anna Christie?
Anna Christie is right, Mr. Krause. Very good. Eugene O'Neill's Anna Christie. And Captain Larson. Captain Larson. Be found where? Mr. Forrester.
The Sea Wolf by Jack London.
In The Sea Wolf by Jack London. Captain Larson's first name was what, Mr. Forrester?
Wolf.
Yes, Captain Wolf Larson. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Now, how about this? From Dr. Quinton Taylor of Garden City, New York. Again, a 2 out of 3 question. This is a question on physiology. Haven't had one for a long time. In a normal adult, they give no further definition of what they mean here. In a normal adult, according to standard measurement, what is the average pulse rate? The average pulse rate. Now, we have here 4 normal adults. It's an offhand characterization, but Mr. Kieran?
Well, it's around the average healthy temperature, I believe. It's somewhere in the 70s.
Yes, 70 to 75 beats per minute is exactly right. Now, how about blood pressure? What would be the average blood pressure? Any ideas, gentlemen?
It has... if nobody else wants it, I'll say it has something to do with a variable over the constant 100. It's 100 plus something that has to do with your age, I believe.
Well, in an adult, let's say a man of 40, something like that, what do you suppose the blood pressure would be if you were reasonably healthy?
Well, not around 130 or so.
Pardon?
Around 130
or so. Yes, I should think so. Might vary between 120 to about 150. Above 150 begins to be abnormal. If any of you 4 gentlemen at the moment have a blood pressure above 150, the program will be over in just a few minutes. Now, how about, this is a hard one, what's the average intelligence in a normal adult? Average intelligence. No cracks.
The average intelligence?
Average intelligence. Normal intelligence.
That's one of those catch questions.
What is average?
It's whatever you want mark as the average, that's it.
Yes, and what is it? What do we generally mark as the average? Normal intelligence is called what?
50.
Well, that's a half-wit.
100. You don't know the people I do.
No, and I just assumed you kept on knowing. Miss Forrest, did you have your hand up?
I said 100.
Yes. You didn't get that from my remark about the half-wit, did you?
No, I said it at the same time.
That's very quick of you.
I can't multiply by 2 anyway.
How do we get the normal intelligence, or what's called the IQ? How do we get it? The intelligence quotient, it's a phrase we constantly use. How do you arrive at it?
I never arrived at it. It's a mystery to me.
I'm out of this question on account of not being an average adult.
Well, now I'm going to tell you all about it. We take the mental age, which is arrived at by a series of complicated examinations that adults never take. They usually give them to children. And then you multiply by the chronological age. You know what that is. You can tell your chronological age by sawing yourself in half and counting the tree rings. Then you take the mental age, and you divide that by the chronological age, and the result will give you your IQ. Now, if your IQ runs between 90 and 110, it says here you're normal. Beg pardon?
If it goes to that, I fell.
I can see that your intelligence is above the average, Mr. Adams. Here's one from Mrs. C.R. Walker of this city. Again, get 2 out of 3. Give me some lines of a poem or a song in which someone is invited to do the following things. In which someone is invited to go to the beach. A line of poetry in which someone is invited to go to the beach. Mr. Kieran.
Oh, oysters, will you walk with me? By the walrus and the carpenter. And Alice in Wonderland.
That's right. Yes, that's a very good one. I was thinking of one from Shakespeare, Mr. Kieran. That would be equally good.
The beach?
Yes. Mr. Forrester?
Come unto these yellow sands.
Yes, from Ariel's song. Come unto these yellow sands and there take hands. That's a very good one. How about a line of a
poem in which someone is invited to come outside, just to come outside the house. Mr. Adams.
Buffalo Gals.
Won't you come out tonight? Yes, that's tonight. Right. very good one. Mr. Kieran?
Come into the garden, Maud, for the black bat, night hat, clone, and so on.
Yes, Tennyson's poem, Maud, slightly more classical, Mr. Adams, but no more correct, and which someone is invited to a suburb of London. Mr. Forrester?
Come down to Kew in Lilac Time by Noise.
Yes, that's the poem called, Mr. Forrester.
Lilac Time, I think.
The barrel organ.
The barrel organ, as Mr. Adams reminds us. Very good. Oh, that was too easy for you, gentlemen. How about this one? From Edward Butler of Brooklyn. Name the body of water on whose shore each of these Russian ports is located. Get 2 out of 3. Odessa is located on what body of water, Mr. Kieran?
The Black Sea.
On the Black Sea. Leningrad on what body of water, Mr. Crouch?
The Neva River.
On the Neva River, but also on a larger body of water into which the river
Finland.
Flows. The Gulf of Finland would be quite right, would it not, Mr. Forrester? Mm-hmm. Gulf of Finland. And how about the port of Rostov? Or perhaps Rostov. Mr. Forrester? On what body of water?
It's on the River Don.
Yes, and we often speak of it, do we not, as Rostov on the Don? It's also on the Gulf of Azov. I guess the River Don and the Gulf of Azov meet at that point. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3 on Mr. Buckler's geographical question. And now, here's a question submitted by our own Milton Cross. It reads, how much would a package of Lucky's cost if Lucky Strike stopped advertising, cutting out all advertising expense? Mr. Cross, will you supply the answer?
Well, the answer, which may surprise some people, is that the price of a package of Lucky's would not vary one iota. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, if we canceled all advertising, even including information, please, if Lucky Strikes came straight from the factory to your cigarette counter, completely unheralded and unsung, the saving per package would be so small that it could not be passed on to you. The fact is that the total cost of advertising Lucky Strikes is but a small fraction of a cent per package. So next time you hear somebody make a comment about the cost of advertising, just remember that advertising is not what you pay for when you buy Lucky's. The makers of Lucky's have always believed that in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. The tobacco, not the advertising. And we pay what it costs to get the finer, milder tobaccos for Lucky's. For instance, 22% more than the market average at Henderson, North Carolina last season, 34% more at Brookneal, Virginia, and so on all over the South. Yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Mr. Fadiman, have I proved that in Lucky's at least, it's the tobacco that counts?
You have indeed, Mr. Cross. And this evening, Lucky Strike has very cheerfully paid out only $25 and one set of the encyclopedia, which is somewhat of a compliment to our guests and our regulars this evening. Lucky Strike thanks you, Mr. Forrester and Mr. Krause, for cooperating tonight. Next week, Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams will welcome, as our first guest, our old friend, the famous composer and music critic, Deans Taylor.